It's live. What makes it special is that it's live and it's interactive. So we're streaming here on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. So whichever channel you're on, we'd love you to get involved and ask us some questions, and we'll respond to them. So get chatting, use the hashtag, or just reply to this tweet. So we're going to do a very quick round of introductions for our guests. I'm Atul Rana, host MassChat Live, teach online all over the world, everything from number bonds to A-level maths. So over to you, Emma.
Okay, hi, I'm Emma Bell. I'm the Maths Enhancement Manager at Grimsby Institute up north. I am also Centre Lead for the Centre for Maths Excellence that's hosted at Grimsby College.
And Mars.
My name is Mercida. People call me Mars most of the time. I'm a Teaching and Learning Manager for Maths and Science at Birmingham Adult Education Service. I'm very passionate about maths, just like the people I have here. So I'm really honoured to be part of this. Thank you.
And Julia.
Hi, thank you very much. Yep, Julia Smith, rabid tweeter at Test Maths, teacher trainer and author. Worked with my BBC Bite Size quite significantly over this past year. AQA expert panel member, I think that's a good one. And yeah, just sort of do lots of courses for the ETF, and work with the Centres for Excellence, providing CPD for a range of organisations around the country. That's me.
Fantastic. Yeah, I've obviously seen you at one of your talks, Juliana. I would describe you and the stuff you do as extreme teaching maths. You know, you've got such little time and you have got so much to convey, and there's so many facets to it. Is the technical delivery of the content, and probably for me the most important facet is just motivating research students, right, after the journey they've already had. And try to get them going.
Absolutely. It's what we all try to do, isn't it, Emma and Mars? Trying to
Absolutely.
get them reinvigorated and remotivated.
No, that's it. They come in with that badge. They're only in the lesson, the recit lesson, because they failed. So they come in with that, hello, my name's failure badge. And trying to chip away at that is a massive part of at least the first month of teaching them, to show them that they can have confidence in their abilities and they do know stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I totally agree. Well, I've taught mostly adults. I've taught 16 to 18 as well, but mostly adults, and they do have this idea that they can't do maths. You know, they just come with that all the time. And most of them, be they kids or adults, they have this preconception that they can't do maths because probably they were told they can't do maths when they were kids, or because they believed themselves or their parents maybe they couldn't do maths. Well, they thought they couldn't, because I think everybody can. So, you know, it's working on that to begin with, because if we don't do that, it's like hammering on cold iron, really. And we need to do as much as that right from day one. Right, you know, when you start a course, I think it should be a case of, you know, getting learners engaged in a different way, showing them that maths is not that, you know, fearful subject that they've always thought of. It's something exciting, interesting through games. You know, I always do on the first day Julia's trick with the timetables with the fingers. So I put the gloves on and I put the numbers on them, and there we go. And it's something that, you know, they've got in their pocket then, and perhaps they'd feel shy to use their fingers. But I tell them it's perfectly fine to do that. It's just another strategy, you know. And then, you know, we do lots of other games. And one thing that I do, you know, I've done for the last 3 years is been writing a letter to math, because I know that if I ask them to write a letter to me, they'd be praising me and going, oh, you're a really good teacher, and so on and so forth. So I'm not talking about the subject. So I want them to write just a few sentences. At the beginning of the course, about how do they feel about maths, and it's just something like, "Dear maths, I hate you."
That's
Or
beautiful.
I'm anxious about you and all of that. And then we come back to that halfway through the course and then at the end of the course as well. And you can see that journey that they've gone through. Of course, that's not the only thing we do. You know, I work on it throughout the year that mistakes are fine. We just, you know, we've got strengths and weaknesses. Probably this is not the topic that you like most, but some, you know, another topic will be. And, you know, working on that, I think, is really important right from day one.
Absolutely right. So next week we've got maths conference. I'm doing 101 top tips. I think I'm going to add that one in, write a letter to maths. I've seen it work really effectively where on day one students are given two postcards and they're asked to write on the first postcard, why are you in this GCSE resit class or functional maths class? And they know why they're there and it's anonymous and everyone does it and all of the postcards are put up on the wall. And you see on the wall, oh, I didn't have any teachers. My teacher hated me. I was really naughty at school. I was really ill. My dad died. You know, you get everything comes out and then you can theme them. And then on the second postcard, what will it mean to you if you get the GCSE resit or the functional maths qualification this time around? And they know the answers. So I'll get £50 from my dad. I'll get onto the level three course. You know, they know the answers. And actually, having that physical thing with 200, 300 cards on walls, you can keep referencing that for a few weeks afterwards, you know, reminding people that they've had a lot of the same experiences. And it will open doors that they don't even realise are shut. That's the point, isn't it? I always say to them, it's just like 10,000 steps a day or five fruit and veg a day. You don't realise how good it is for you, but you might not like running, but actually it's really good for you. And it's the same. It's the same kind of analogies, really.
Mm. Yeah, with that research, we've been doing a lot of it, motivational research with our Centre for Excellence. And we've done student interviews where we've discussed, well, what are things within your control and what are the things outside your control? So, you know, obviously like bereavements and things like that, or your mum booking a holiday during the exam, so I missed the exams, you know, that kind of thing. And asking them to focus on those internal barriers, the things that they can work on, and that gets them past the external barriers, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
Got a first question already. Well, more of a demonstration. I don't know if you're up for this, Julia, but Dee's asking, gloves with numbers on, question mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark.
Give me 2 seconds and I'll go and get my marigolds in the washing up bowl. I mean, I am known for tea towels and marigolds. What's going on? This is ridiculous. I think I might actually have some in my teacher bag, so just bear with me a second. Give me a minute, talk amongst yourselves and I'll get some marigolds.
Yeah, sure. Okay, it'll be worth it.
It will.
Yeah.
That's a lovely bell behind you there, Julia.
Yeah. No, it's obviously, yes, what Julia's heading towards is this for non-calculator stuff, the times, tables, facts. And Julia's got a fantastic hack using the ultimate manipulative.
Absolutely. Right. You ready for this then? So, marigold gloves. The only reason I use marigold gloves is that I can put the numbers on the fingers, the digits. And most vocational areas will have a pair of gloves, PPE gloves, welding gloves. I've done it with welding gloves with our welders at Colchester Institute. And it's just a different method of remembering the times tables. And it's things like the 7/8s and the 8/9s, the few that they get still stuck on. And we know how important those foundations of maths are, those 9 basics of maths, really underpin in the same way as you build a house and really good solid foundations. You need those solid foundations in maths, and times tables is part of that. And we know that it uses up working memory space, which we might need all of that working memory space for problem solving. So they become better problem solvers having those basics. So each of my fingers is labelled 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. So I can multiply any version of those combinations. So I've got 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. I'm going to multiply 8 by 8. So I've got my 8s. I'm going to put my 2 middle fingers together. So 8 8s, we know, I think hopefully you can see that. We know that that's 64, but how does this represent that? The 2 fingers that come together and the fingers above the 2 fingers that come together, they're all 10s. So I've got 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. And then below, I've got 2 on one side and two on the other side. So those are multiplied together. 2 times 2 is 4. So 8 eights are 64. Hand multiplication. So let me just do 7 and 8. So I'm going to choose 6, 7. I've got my second finger there. 6, 7, 8. I've got my third finger there. Put those two together. 7 times 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 50. And then below, I've got 2 on one side and 3 on the other. 2 threes are 6. So 56. I've seen that work since the old key skill days. I used to teach it to my welders and engineers. And you'd look through the windows in the exams and they'd be very surreptitiously. I do it with big gloves on so everyone can see and you make a big thing of it. I would see them very surreptitiously underneath the table just doing that. It really helps for memory issues. It's just an alternative method. And there's a key phrase in the Department for Education subject guidance: any valid mathematical method that gets the marks is entirely appropriate. So our work is about looking at how a student works with those basic skills. First of all, that's our starting point. And then saying, oh, I can see you're struggling with that subtraction. Have you seen it like this? Or maybe that's not the way you can learn it. Have you seen it like this? It's not anything to do with, you know, learning styles or all that nonsense. It's just about finding the appropriate method for the person. And having that collaborative approach of how do you do the maths? How do you do the maths? One of my favourite things on Twitter at the moment is Pam Harris on a Thursday night. And I don't know if you've seen her, anybody, but she runs Math Strat Chat. And she just poses a question and it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant because you'll get 40, 50, 60 answers from math educators and people looking at it, just showing how they would do that typical calculation. It might be fractions, it might be decimals, times tables as well she tackles. And it's just brilliant, that sharing of methods, because it's about finding efficient methods, isn't it? I was taught very, very traditionally, and my maths is very good, but I wish I'd been given the choice, because actually I'm faster, I'm more efficient with other methods, but I was never told that there were other ways to do things. So that's enough from me.
No, we find that in the recent class as well, when we're teaching, that letting the learners pick their method that fits for them, it's almost like a breath of fresh air for them, because they've gone through school where they've been told, no, you have to do it this way because this is the way I'm teaching you. And yet that's not the message. Any method, is as long as it works and as long as it's applicable, is okay. And that's what life's like. If you've got a method that works for you, you go forward with it. You don't think, oh my goodness, I must write out this multiplication in a specific way. If you've got a method that works for you, well, maybe I'll use it.
Absolutely right.
I totally agree. And yeah. It's just like having different methods that you can use as a teacher. You know, you can add them to your toolkit, can't you? And if a method doesn't work for one learner, then you just say, okay, let's just try this one. For example, column method hasn't worked for so many of our learners. But then, you know, there are so many other grid methods, lattice method, Chinese method, you name it. There are so many other methods. And you've got to give it a go and see, because obviously with one of them, it's likely to click for the learners. And we just got to, yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, we wait for those light bulb moments, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Why didn't no one show me this before? You get
absolutely.
That.
I mean, it was exemplified to me with a Monday night reset class with a lady who was in her 40s, early 40s. She wanted to be a nurse and she couldn't get onto the course or anything without her maths. And half an hour of just doing alternative methods on very simple stuff, the subtraction, dividing fractions using the stacked method perhaps. Half an hour, she got really annoyed and said, why has no one bothered to show me this? I can do it like this. And I always thought I was thick, and it had really held her back, helping her own children through primary school, etc. And I think we're in a golden age at the moment, because we have got things like the Jo Morgan's Compendium of Mathematical Methods, got Gemma Sherwood's wonderful book on enhanced subject knowledge for number and algebra. You know, we've got so many really, really good books out there that will help us. So we're not having to go and search for all of them. They're all there and readily available to us now. But it's certainly something we have to focus on.
Mm. Yeah, it's such a... I remember Mark McCourt saying this at one of his workshops. It's as teachers of mathematics, we first do the mathematics as students that made us successful. And then when you start off teaching, you naturally tend to teach the stuff that you were yourself successful at, and then you learn from other teachers, and from teaching that, that's actually not always going to work. In fact, quite a lot of it won't work, what we think from an expert's point of view rather than a novice's. And then we have this long journey into becoming expert teachers where we figure out other methods. We learn from other teachers about other methods that work, and they have this kind of whole new level of maturity about the methods. And you know, you should always have in your toolbox maybe like 3-4 methods for every single topic in maths, because you just don't know which one's going to work.
Definitely. And I know that it's also about the student and the particular cohort of students that myself and Emma and Mars have. You know, they're post 16. They have been through a curriculum. They have gone through 11 years usually of state education, and they've come out at the end of it, and they have seen all of the maths before. They've seen fractions since year 3. They've seen averages since year 5, year 6 in primary. And yet here they are at 16, 17, 25, however old they are. And they've still got those muddles, those basic skill, not, you know, gaps. So it is about this sense of revision. It's all about revision. But revision, if you break down the etymology of the word, it's about seeing things again differently, seeing it second time, third time, fourth time, tenth time, seeing it differently, revisioning the maths, seeing it slightly differently. So I think we all work like that. I know that we do, the ladies here, we work in that way. It's all based on revision. You've seen the maths before, and I'm just here to help you see it differently and more easily, hopefully.
I absolutely love that. And I, what sprung to mind while we were talking is that, you know, you get some learners who kind of stuck to a method and it works for them, and then they're reluctant to try another method. And I always say, you know, have in your bag at least 2 methods, I say to the learners, because it's going to help you understand math much better, more in depth. But also, if that method you've learned fails you in the exam just for once, you have another one to help you.
The backup pen. Yeah.
Yeah.
The one that I'm so loving at the moment, it's all through Pam Harris, as I say on Twitter, is ratio tables. The power of ratio tables, oh my word. You can do so many things with ratio tables, including ratio, obviously, but it's just such a really good structure. You know, it's just so powerful. I love it. Love ratio tables. It's my new favourite thing. And that's the thing about teaching online, isn't it? That we've all been forced into this, and it's made us have to reconsider how we're teaching and our planning for it. But my favourite thing now is the visualiser, and I have to have a stack of whiteboards. I've got a stack of about 30 whiteboards, so I can just keep removing one to the side, and you know, because nobody wants to see you wiping clean your whiteboard. So, you know, that has been my favourite thing over lockdown, just making me having to use a visualiser and whiteboard.fi as well. But the visualiser with MathSpot, the MathSpot camera, you're there in seconds and you can quickly demonstrate something and then see them practising it as well. It's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
I love MathSpot. I always start my lessons with MathSpot. You know, start something, then later on to visualize, because I'm quite, you know, hands-on, and I really like manipulatives. Centicubes are my favorite thing, really. I tend to use them for almost any topic, and there is scope for it, really. So, yeah, and the counters and all of that, which now you can find on MathSpot online, but, you know, when you are in the classroom, those little things help you understand math better.
Exactly, and even using masks in the classroom as well, because we don't have to sanitize everything between learners.
No, it's a great site. I mean, I remember going to Johnny like 3 years ago and say, "Oh, I'm using your site for online teaching." I was like, "Oh, they,"
yeah.
And obviously his site, even with John Corbett, I said, "Oh, you know what I'm doing? I'm using your site with students all over the world." And it's like, "Oh, can you do that?" Of course you can. All the stuff's there already. Every video is there. Every worksheet's there. Yeah. The MathSpot site works on an iPad, it works on a desktop, it works on a mobile. You can use these virtual manipulatives, and I think we're just at the beginning of this kind of online tech thing that translates well in the classroom, in or remotely on mobile phones. And I've used these virtual manipulatives with students for when I first started using them, I was skeptical of them because, you know, can you use maybe really real questionnaires or real deans, which is true to an extent, but I found them to be really, really effective. Now I've been doing it for a few years, and it's really, when you talk about using a virtualizer and those whiteboards, Julia, it's exactly like what I was doing for many years. I had a camera, and I had just lots of these A4 papers stripped into like four pits, and there's loads of them. So I was like, do this writing, take that out, do that. And really, there's no set way of teaching online in the same way as there's no set way of teaching in the classroom, because what matters really more is your expertise, your relationship with the children, your knowing the children, knowing what to teach them, responding to them. And that matters so much, much, much more than whatever technology you're using, both in the classroom and just as relevant online. In fact, you can get distracted by too much technology online and it can throw you off. And then you're starting to learn this
there's
new
so
bit of tech.
Yeah.
Like you don't.
Yeah, there's so much out there at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to use a graphics tablet because there is a learning curve associated with it. If you can convey whatever you have to convey using a visualizer or using pen and paper and sticking a piece of paper up on the camera or a chat window, there's no set way of doing it. It is whatever you think is right in whichever way you've worked for. Well, we've got a question come up from Graham from last week. He was our Graham Kewing. So on motivation, how did you find the motivation of this year's RESET cohort, given their maths failure badge came from the CAGS awarded rather than exam performance? Is there anything to be learned for next year's RESET cohort who will be in a similar position?
I start.
It's a big one.
Okay. Well, we found that because the way the CAGs were awarded last year, it was all about a potential. So it was all about if the pandemic hadn't happened and teaching had continued, where would that learner be? And so learners were getting grades that didn't reflect their actual mathematical ability. It reflected their mathematical potential. So that was the first problem. They were perhaps coming in with a 3, because that's where they would have got by the end of the course, but their skills weren't on par with a grade 3. Does that nuance? So we had that first. Then we had the ones that disagreed with their CAGs from the teachers. So we had a massive cohort of learners sit the RESET in November. And it showed that perhaps the CAGs weren't accurate in that sense as well, compared to an exam and the their potential. This year, I think it's going to be massively different because there's a lot more upfrontness, that the learners are going to know what evidence is being put forward for their grades. They're going to know they've had a bigger hand in what they're doing. So I think motivation-wise, last year they were very angry, some of them, at the grades that they got. This year they know it's more in their hands, so I'm hoping that that will mean that they work harder and they fill their gaps more so that they can prove what they're capable of. And I think that's going to be a very, very motivating factor for them. We start again with the learners on Monday face to face, and we're going to be talking through the processes with them. And yeah, we're hoping that that openness is going to be a lot different to what it was last year, because last year it was very last minute. It was very get it sorted and get it QA'd and get it done. This year, it's a lot more open process.
Okay, from my point of view, I mean, I teach teachers now, so I'm not directly frontline, but I do see an awful lot of teachers, private training providers and FE colleges, you know, all week. And the noises are that one vice principal this week, she pointed out to me, you do realise that by the time they come to college next year, they won't have sat any public exams since their SATs in year 6. And that is going to be huge for our cohort next year. I've also heard from other teachers who know that their hours are being cut because that they are expecting there'll be more grade 4s awarded this summer. So they're expecting less students in for September. Quite how that is I don't know, it is known already. It does worry me. This generosity of grade that we've seen during the CAGs as well has been difficult. And I think that, they're already suggesting that it shouldn't be over lenient or over harsh in your grading this year. The fact it's teacher assessments as well is a difficulty. And Mel was talking about the Wales released about this three tier of appeal process potentially that we might see, who knows. So there's so many variables at the moment, but I think from September the motivation is going to be a real challenge. I think we're going to see another huge entry for the November series of students that at the moment they can only appeal on procedural problems or some inaccuracy. So if that continues through, there will be a number of students that are not happy about their grade, and I suspect we'll see a big increase in that November cohort. Potentially we're going to see less level four students. It's just a real challenge, isn't it? It's keeping your eyes on what's going on and conveying all of that information to your students as well, and giving the opportunity for the teachers to talk about it all as well.
I totally agree with what you've said, and I'm actually in a similar position to you, Julia, this year, because I haven't had a class this academic year, so I've been working mostly with teachers. But I wanted to draw attention to functional skills because we find that it's such a difficult position to be in at the moment for the learners, because, you know, we've had the changes in specification happen in September 2019, and pretty much they haven't had the chance to actually try what it feels like to do an exam. So they might have done level one functional skills, let's say, last year, and it was centre assessed grades. Now this year they've gone into level two, and it's just much harder than it used to be before. So we just, I think we're predicting a dip in grades, but at the same time, we need to put things in place, like perhaps opportunities for revision in the centres for these learners to get kind of face-to-face, a bit, you know, a bit of tuition face-to-face, and the chance to actually try attempting an actual paper, not electronic, but you know.
There is an anomaly, isn't there, between functional skills and the assessment that's going on, because they're assessed on all of the content still, and our GCSE, which is expected to be only delivered content. So there's a real disparity there between the functional skills, you know, exam itself. You know, that's not being it's not being shortened in any way or made smaller in any way. It's the whole content is being assessed still, whereas I said it's not the same. And there are a number of colleges now who are not doing level one, level two functional maths for that exact reason, that it's really hard to pass. And they are looking at the other awards, such as the Pearson number and algebra awards, which, you know, do serve them very well. It is just about being aware of what other people are doing as much as anything. And when you work with teachers, it's giving them examples of what other people do all the time is most helpful, I think.
Yeah, and making it fit for your learners and your cohorts. And that, I mean, the whole fact that we're talking here now, this is exactly it, that we need to keep doing this and keep talking about things just to make sure that the learners all get everything that they deserve.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a very different situation from last year. I mean, last year was just this very abrupt cutoff at the end of March for me. Quite a lot of duties were, that's it, we're finished with year 11. That's early goodbye. I mean, and year 13 as well. There's not much I can do at this point. Like, dude, it's, whereas now, sort of looking more optimistically, hopefully we won't have to go into this lockdown stuff again. Now you actually are going to go back on Monday, and hopefully you'll just continue the whole school year and you have more time to get a more accurate idea of where they are, whatever form that assessment takes, rather than here's a cutoff now based on everything you know until that point. What a difficult thing to do. I mean, even this is difficult, but at least you're with them and you can take them through to the end of the school year.
Exactly. And my learners, I do feel more in control this time. They feel like they're in more in control of their own destiny than they definitely were last year.
And I think I know, Emma, as well, with the Focus 15 approach that you have, the research behind that, it's looked at the 150 subject objectives And narrowed those down to the most useful ones, the most commonly occurring. I mean, you can say more about it, Emma, but it's refining the content to suit the student. We haven't got the time post-16 to deliver all of that content in enough detail for it to have the impact. And I think, you know, the specialism in post-16 comes at choosing which bits you can do best, but also handing ownership to the student to say, you know, national numeracy hit the nail on the head when they say, you know, they've got to value the qualification first of all, believe that they can do it with you, and then they've got to put some effort in as well. It's just not something that just happens to them. They've actually got to be motivated to do some work outside of the classroom as well. We don't have enough time. Emma, talk about the Focus 15, this is really good.
How long you got? Okay, right, so yeah, the Focus 15, it's been a labour of love for a few years now, and it's finally coming to fruition. What we did was we looked at lots of data from Pearson, because Pearson's Emporium has a lot of data on past exams. And we wanted to see, is there something about a grade 4 student that's specific? What are they getting an understanding that the other grade students aren't? So if we can focus on these topics that the grade 4 students are nailing, then hopefully it will help learners make progress. So we looked at the 2017 data to start off with, and some topics fell out, and it was like, hang on, these are the topics, I've heard Julia talk about these topics before, those 9 specific topics that Julia's talked about, and it's the fractions, it's the decimals, it's the multiplication, divisions, it's all the fundamentals of maths are falling out here that grade 4 students are understanding, that those that aren't passing aren't getting. So of course we had a list, we checked it in 2018 and did some refining, and we came out with the Focused 15. So the Focused 15 are 15 topics that if a student can master and nail, there are enough marks on every exam board to get a 5. So if they absolutely master them all, there's enough marks to get a 5 on the foundation paper. So if we can get our learners through those 15 topics and get them mastered and fill their gaps in their buckets, because they have all got different gaps, if we can get them all to learn those 15 topics to the best of their ability, they've got every chance to get that 4 that's going to open doors. But also it's the type of maths that's going to serve them later in life as well. It's the fractions, decimals, the percentages, all those things that are going to make them live a better and more fulfilling life. So it's like hitting 2 birds with 1 stone. We're getting them that 4 that's going to open the door, but we're also giving them skills for life. So our scheme of learning, it basically has cut down the whole of the specification to those 15 topics. Of course, the learners are coming with other stuff that they know. I mean, there's no Pythagoras on the Focus 15, but they've come with some knowledge. So if a question came up on Pythagoras that they've revised or they remember from school, that's absolutely fine. It's a bonus. But we're going to focus on these 15 topics and get you through. And because the learners can see those 15 topics and it's not an unsurmountable mountain, they feel more motivated because they can say, actually, I know, yeah, I can do this. I can actually do this. And that motivation makes a difference. So by cutting it down, we make their motivation better. We make our teaching more focused and we give them more skills for life. So
It's a fact, it's research based as well, which is, you know, where's the evidence for it? Oh, it's here. Okay. Yeah. That's why, you know, many teachers, Mars, you'll know this as well, that many teachers say, I haven't got time to deliver everything. Why are you trying to deliver everything? Don't deliver everything. They've seen the curriculum, they can do stuff, they're really good at some stuff, they're not so good at other stuff, and they don't know some stuff. Forget about the stuff they don't know. Let's focus on what they can do, practicing it till they cannot get it wrong. Not practicing it till they get it right, but practicing until they cannot get it wrong, and then focus on where they've got the gaps and the misconceptions. That's enough. You have to do everything.
I absolutely agree.
Mars, you've got a fantastic website as well. Tell us about your website, please, because it's amazing.
Oh, thank you. But I want to speak first about
Emma's approach,
and I love it. And I think, especially with adults, we've got to focus on these because it's going to help them. And it's like key topics. If you think of multiplicative reasoning, for example, think of how many other areas that affect, and it's almost everything, really. So if they've nailed that, and you know those timetables we talked about earlier, If they've got that, you know, they're well into, they've got the foundation and they will achieve. So, you know, I totally agree with that. Now, oh yeah, I'll show you my website as well. Now, how it all started, it was a case of, I noticed that there were so many videos out there and resources for GCSE, but I couldn't find something for functional skills for my learners. And I've been using Flipped Learning for about 4 or 5 years, and I wanted to do something with my functional skills learners and couldn't find something. So I started that way, recorded some of the videos, and then I thought, hold on a second, I think other people might benefit from that. And I put them in a website. And that's how it all started, really. So I'm going to quickly share the screen to show you that.
It's been very popular, Mars. It really has.
Thank you. I didn't expect it to be that popular, but you know, as I said, it all started because I wanted to help people, and I hope if I've helped one learner, one teacher, that's it for me, you know. So yeah, it's marsmath.com, and I'm actually uploading videos and resources in here for functional skills mainly, just a bit on GCSE, but it's something that I'm looking to work on a bit more later on. So if you I start with motivation, like we said earlier, I want them to believe that they can do it, so I want to add more resources in here as well. But if I kind of set them the challenge to give this a go, no matter what they believe, whether, you know, they think they can do maths or they can't, give it a go, because everybody can, and I'm sure they can. I believe in them, in every single person. Then timetables, just like we mentioned, the importance of timetables. So I've created some videos with some kind of tricks that can help, you know, that can help them remember the timetables. And then I go into the levels from entry one to level two.
I really like your self-assessment tools on there. Just that one sheet where students can traffic light, where they think they are. And it, again, it helps them, Dylan William, you know, making them the architect of their own learning, really helps them to take ownership of it, doesn't it? And yes, they can see the curriculum. How often do we show them what the curriculum is? That's all there is.
Yes, absolutely. So I try in these videos to use these centre cubes that I talked about earlier and practical things that I've got around in the house, just to make the link between a maths concept and how we actually encounter it in everyday life. So most of the times it's center cubes or sticks or counters, money, coins, anything really that can help them understand the concept. And then they've got some questions within that particular objective. So again, I tried to make it quite visual, and application questions wherever I can, more on reasoning and problem solving, any misconceptions that, you know, I want those to be exposed and sort of thing. So I've now managed to actually put the answers up as well, so they can check themselves whenever they want. Put a few practice papers. I've made some videos on some of the levels, but it's work in progress really. But the feedback has been really good so far. So, you know, I will continue.
Yeah, and I know that our apprentices and the trainers are using them when they go out to deliver to apprentices, because everything is just there ready for them, and the trainers are really finding it so useful, Mars. They really are.
Thank you.
It's a great breakdown of the maths journey, not just for functional maths, but for those who don't know, entry level one, entry level two, entry level three is essentially covering sort of the primary maths journey in a very in a very structured way. So I've had students who don't sit the GCSE because they're still learning number bonds or some other thing, but the entry level one qualification gives them something that is a tangible qualification, and they can slowly, gradually, I have that with adults actually. I have some adults tutees, and I tell them, actually, instead of going for the GCSE, maybe 5 years from now, when we get you this entry level one, then entry level two, entry, it's a bit like a music grading where you go through the grades very slowly. So you have a tangible certificate, which feels good. You have an achievement. And what your site has done is actually very neatly. I haven't seen a single site where entry level one, two, three has been broken down with the resources. so well, except for the exam board websites. So it's very handy, not just for the entry level teaching itself, but actually referring to some of the whole maths journey from the beginning.
When I was head of maths in a school, secondary school, and a pupil referral unit, we always made sure from year 10 and year 11 that they had functional maths qualifications as well as working towards the GCSE, because it was the one that was going to be most useful to them post 16. And like you say, they may not achieve a great grade in GCSE, but they might be able to get onto an apprenticeship program if they've already got their level one functional skills or something. So it is a great qualification in schools as well to consider for those borderline, by year 9, year 10, whether their aspiration is to go off to be a plasterer or a painter and decorator, and to arm them with functional maths along the way and functional English as well, is a good strategy, I believe.
Got another question from D. Is the Focus 15 also applicable to IGCSE or just GCSE?
It was based on 9-1 GCSE, but that would be an interesting project actually to see how it maps to IGCSE as well. I know that a lot of the topics, especially at the beginning of the 15, do map to functional skills because we've got those learners that are bridging between, so getting them through the functional skills as well, especially Focus 1 and Focus 2. They're the core mathsy stuff that really does link to functional skills. But Dave, I'm really interested to have a look into that. So I don't know yet, but
yeah,
I'm writing a checklist in my head that I have things to do. Yeah, exactly. Let's see if it does.
The IGCSE is quite a popular qualification. Well, yeah. It's international GCSE, so I have tutees doing it internationally, but it's used in quite a lot of the public schools in the UK, in England, and but also with the homeschooling community, because the two papers are calculator for GCSE, international GCSE, the Edexcel ones, and given the choice, it seems for homeschoolers that is quite a, if you can get away with like non-calc stuff, you can go with the two calculated papers. So is there a place we can see this Focus 15 list? Is there a website or something, or?
Julia, it's on yours.
I've integrated it as part of the 5 hours, and Graham has put a question in, so presumably we'll come back to that, Atul. If I share my screen, so the 5 hours, which is the curriculum that I wrote for post-16, has now gone online because we were in the mass of a great big research project last year, which collapsed obviously in March with lockdown. So I've pushed it all online. The principles are that there are 5 bits of maths that a person does every day. So it's this sense of daily maths, and I'm really trying to push this now. So if a student can do 5 little bits of maths every day in this 5 hour structure, we've integrated it. Emma and I have worked quite closely integrating it into the Focus 15 because it's essentially that in a different package. I've got the delivery model, and then Emma's got the topics there that I'm really focused on. So the Focus 15 principles are there. Padlet.com, Test Maths 1, 5 hours online. You can have a look at the principles of 5 hours online. I wrote the 5 hours curriculum, and then we mapped it into AQA's resources. And we've got basic skills tests as well, which are fabulous. To find out where those gaps are in the 9 basics. So if you want to take a look at the 5 hours online, this is a sample of the different pathways. There's a functional maths pathway. There's a primary pathway as well, which has just been developed. It was used extensively for the November reset. We've got this full year pathway, and also I'm now looking at a catch-up pathway as well, which is essentially this recent pathway. The activities are very varied. 5 minutes of recall, 10 minutes of routine maths, so something like Call But Maths 5 a day, maths bot, number of the day, maths box as well from Sandra. So I'm working with collaboratively with those type of people. Revise a particular topic every day, so 15 minutes spent on revising something like Pythagoras or something like this one is ratio and scale, and Nicola Whiston has provided non years, so they're not year 9, year 10 resources. She's taken all of that referencing off her knowledge organisers, which are, again, are very useful for our students in terms of knowing what content is.
I'm jumping in, Julia, sorry, but it's a really important with teaching with more mature learners, is that a lot of the maths that we are covering with them has been covered at school in year 9, some of it in primary. So if we've got resources that say year 6 maths fractions, that's going to turn our learners off straight away. So having it unbranded like this is really, really important.
That's and also that was a conversation I had a little while ago with Craig Barton and his diagnostic questions. Absolutely brilliant, but they had a picture of children on there and we had this big debate going on. Please can you take the picture of children on, because this is fantastic for our needs as well, and you're just going to widen your market. And he did, so that was really good. So yes, you've got the 5R structure on there. Have a look at the Padlet. You've got the links to the Focus 15 principles, the blog that Emma's written, and the Focus 15 wheel. So you can see all the topics. You can see the 5R's curriculum on AQA, and the, oh, that was from Charlotte Hawthorne, who did a kind of sketchpad thing on the podcast. So there's lots on there. Please have a look at it. And obviously ask me any questions that you would like to on it. You're very welcome. Yes, yeah, so I think Graham had said there about having an alternative curriculum, an alternative exam.
I mean, the Focus 15 is what I wish the exam was for Focus 16. It's like we've taken what is available to us and made it more accessible for Post 16. I know that Nuffield and MEI have looked at and did a consultation on a separate GCSE for Post 16. Which did look at key skills, and their point was making it comparable. So if you got a grade 4 in this new GCSE, it was comparable to a school general certificate of secondary education grade 4. But there is that idea that this is more functional math, so is it a life skills GCSE? I mean, I love the Welsh system where they've got that numeracy paper that is accessible for, you know, everybody, and then you can extend into other papers as well. But the Focus 15 is definitely what I wish the GCSE was for post 16. And in the absence of that type of qualification, we'll work with what we've got and make it fit.
I know they talked about last week, ever exams going online. Would that be, and Mel kept saying not in her lifetime. Well, yeah. I would love to see, as you've suggested there, a Focus 15, kind of those 9 basics just tested as pure maths. Just tested as pure maths and then tested in context. And context is always an issue, because a lot in functional maths, a lot of our 16, 17-year-olds haven't got the life experience of electric bills and going to taking your car to the garage. And, you know, context is a big, big feature of functional maths, which is a big stumbling block for a lot of them. So I would love to see, and Graham, you're charged with this now, is to try and get either a multiple choice test, a numeracy type test. I agree with you, Emma, there, that Welsh system is really useful. And the resources, there's bite-sized resources for that Welsh numeracy GCSE
That's
as well.
Amazing.
I've done an awful lot of work on it and the bite size of the WJEC stuff is really good for numeracy, for functional maths as well. Yeah. And that's all integrated in 5R's online. So I kind of cherry pick the best resources that will, usually free resources, which will help the student the most. And they're very varied. There's lots of games on there. I love the Transom games. The games, and there's, you know, Johnny on his old site had some really good games. Mel's got some really good games on Just Maths, so they're all integrated into it. Just to vary the activity and get them to do daily maths. Yeah. A little bit of maths every day would be great.
Motivation again.
Absolutely, because you could teach something really, really well to learners. They will get it, but if they don't go back to it within 24 hours, most of it is gone, you know? And you've got to go back to it actually at least 5 times for it to be going into the long-term memory. So, you know, we put in our schemes where we do this first and then that next and then that next. But it just doesn't work like that if we don't go back to the same topics again and again. And
they've
you know,
got to be motivated. motivated to come back to do the maths outside of the classroom when you're not, when they're not with you. They need to be doing something. I mean, I've got this Fitbit on my hand here, and it buzzes me and tells me get moving, or it gives me little medals. I got a medal for walking the length of the Imperial Penguin March. So, you know, but things like that, wouldn't that be great if you could have a little motivation thing? Have you done your daily maths? I'm working on it to develop an app for it. It would be amazing. Yeah. Do your daily maths. Have you done your recall stuff? Have you done your routine maths? I mean, that would be amazing if we could.
Oh, here's your Focus
point,
1 badge. Here's your Focus 2 badge. Oh, my word.
Absolutely. Wouldn't it be cool? We'll get there, Em. We'll get there.
Yeah. It's fascinating. I mean, it's also maybe a cultural thing as well. I mean, it's the same with tutoring. I have students who have that one-on-one time with me for an hour, and I tell them the same thing. You're going to still have to do stuff in your own time. Like, this tutoring is not going to be enough by a long shot. You have to use the tutoring and the lessons in the classroom and your own initiative to look up the questions and do that. I set them on a 5-a-day diet as well. I call them, in your year 10, year 11, 5 a day. There's no getting out of it. And I grew up in India for my first few years, and there it's just expected you do more of the work at home than school. It's just like the norm in the culture. You just do work at home. And I remember my dad would get these three siblings, and when we were primary school, he built us a really nice habit. We didn't like it at the time, but before he used to go to work, we did a half an hour of English spelling and maths. We did it every single day, and that just became a habit. And then when we became teenagers, that habit of studying remained, and we just continued it, because it takes a few days to build. You have to fight all of that internal resistance. It's fine. That's all of us. Like, we have the Fitbit days to remind me as well. I have to get out and do my steps.
Yeah.
But if you bite-size it, chunk it, and you build this habit over time, you get this compounding effect, right? We know as mathematicians, you get this compounding that takes place over time. It's very, very slow, but the more you do it, the more the habit gets internalized. You don't have to think about it anymore. It becomes more autopilot, and that's the kind of thing. That's the kind of thing you're talking about, I think, yeah.
Absolutely. And it says 24/7 learning as well, isn't it? The girl that was telling me she hadn't lost any one of her students, she'd managed to keep them all since September. They would be messaging her 11, 12 at night. She said, but that was fine. They knew they wouldn't get a response, but that's when they're up. That's when they're working. So if you give them the features, the 5 hours online where they can go and do some practice anytime, any place, anywhere. It's that old Martini advert, isn't it? If you're as old as me and remember that. Anytime, anywhere, any place learning, you know, they can just go and do 10 minutes on the bus, or, you know, after they've finished game of whatever they play, Call of Duty or whatever they play, Animal Crossing even, they can, you know, they can just get into that really good habit. Really good habits, that's what we need. Good learner habits, a little bit of maths every day. The only way to get good at maths is to shed loads of maths. You can't read about it, you can't look at pictures of it. You've just got to do some maths.
Yes,
that's it.
It's all boiled down to motivation, isn't it? You know, and you know, I was thinking while you're speaking, there is this research that Catherine Cockerton did with her learners on incisive questions. So they asked themselves, what is actually stopping me? What's getting in the way? Is it just me? Is it my parents? You know, and sometimes it is the parents believe that, you know, they can't do maths, and perhaps that's what they're listening to. But most of the time it's the learners themselves, isn't it? And realizing that it is them who can make the difference is a massive thing. So taking the time perhaps to do that. And one thing I used to do at the beginning of every course is to get the learners to share with me a vision of what they want to become, and we'd stick it on the folders. So every single session, it would be in front of them. I want to become a nurse. So there'd be a kind of an animated picture of themselves, you know, dressed up as a nurse, really, in a nurse uniform. So that kind of reminded them that it was what they wanted to do.
Got a nice comment, a contrarian comment from a Corina in the US. She says, interesting, I'm writing from the US. There's a big push here to eliminate homework, and surprisingly, it's coming from both teachers and parents.
Okay, Mars, I know, is a great believer in flipped learning. I think homework, yes, for post 16, that's not what we're talking about with daily maths. I think it's almost like pre-work, and it's just the work that's expected that you do as part of this study program. Obviously, not every single day, but if you can do a little bit of maths most days, as well as coming to your class, and then they're just exercises. It's not reams and reams of homework and bits that we're talking about. And it's also the way in which I've structured the 5 hours online, and the way in which the 5 hours is it's games, it's fun things, it's things with different levels. There's an element of gamification in quite a few of those with the work that the games that Johnny had on his old studymaths.com website. There are different points that you can get, and it's the idea of you just playing against yourself and trying to improve your score, improve your level. So a lot of these things that you can use for practice, for some really serious legitimate practice, I don't think they feel like homework. And that's another guiding principle of the 5 hours, that if it looks and feels and sounds like schoolwork, you're just going to get the same result. So it has to look, anything we do post 16 has to look and feel and sound different to schoolwork. And that includes homework. This isn't homework, this is daily maths. And it's quite different. It could be a game, it could be a video to watch, it could be an exercise to do. And all of the exercises are give immediate, yes, you're right, no, you're wrong. So they get that instant feedback as to whether they've got it right or wrong. If they've got it right, they can carry on practicing until they cannot get it wrong. If they do get it wrong, and then that's the point at which they go to their tutor and say, I can't see how that's the answer, help me. So you're really focused. It goes back to Emma's point, the focus, you know, you're focusing on the areas that they struggle most with.
I wonder whether that comment is coming because of the pressures of marking that many teachers face, and of course parents as well, because they have to help their kids. But I think, like Julia was saying, it doesn't need to feel like it is maths. It can be a game, something they do normally anyway. You know, they spend so much time on their phones doing something totally unrelated, wasting their time most of the time. But if they do something that is useful like this, and it doesn't feel like maths, but maybe it feels like a game. I've been playing the game for a while, and it just feels so nice when you actually achieve something in there. And I've been wondering, like you're saying, I wish this was something related to maths, because there are kind of, you know, little bits in there that do link with maths, but it's not entirely math. And it would be so nice if, you know, the whole curriculum was mapped to that, and you'd get them different levels and you'd get kids and adults to do that as a kind of game and share and, you know, maybe talk to others about it. What did they achieve and all of that?
Absolutely. So that's my drive. And that's kind of coming from this work, this year working in a very, very different way. And I know, Mars, you're part of the Constellations as well, aren't you, with Lou Mycroft and all of the people in the Constellations, which have allowed us to come into ideas rooms and then think big and think where do we want to go with this, and then all of the support that you get within that as well. That's been a breath of fresh air this year, as well, being part of Constellation C there, and allowing these ideas to develop and think, yeah, you know, we can go for it and make it look a bit different perhaps.
And creating connections, you see. So I've got to know you more through that,
yeah,
haven't I?
Yeah, yeah.
Apart from that training session like years ago that I attended, and I won two towels. but yeah, it was through Constellation C and C plus through AP Connect that I got to know you. And
absolutely.
For me, it's meant, you know, trying things out, you know, coming up with those ideas that you're talking about, but also creating connections and working on collaborative projects with other people. So, you know, who knows what we're going to be doing next.
And that wouldn't happen without COVID, would it? So
yeah, exactly what I was going to say, Julia. Yeah. I mean, this has just opened so many doors and knocked down so many barriers of distance and all things like that. We've just had a comment from America talking to us about our teaching, and that lack of barrier and that opening of doors and making connections is the positive that's coming out of COVID, definitely.
Absolutely. And I tell you something, perhaps 2 years ago, I wasn't using Twitter at all, but it was through AP Connect that, you know, Lou pushed us. And then I got to know Julia Moore, I got to know Emma. With Emma, we've communicated with each other, but this is actually the first time we've seen each other face to face. Would you believe that? It wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Yeah, I knew you'd be good on this, Mars.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic. Corina just got a little follow-up there. I think it's just more of a comment from her point of view. It's about equity here. A lot of our students at high school work part-time jobs, which I imagine is the case for some of the researchers as well, or adults at least. They're doing part-time jobs as well. Yeah.
Oh yes, I'm actually meant to say something about this when we, you know, discussing how learners are coping this year. I was speaking to a learner a couple of days ago, and she's an adult learner and she's got kids at home. She was saying, well, this year has been so difficult for me. I've done my best. And in fact, she attended all of the lessons, but sometimes it's been a case of attending a lesson while having a child in her lap, you know. And she said, this is not fair that I've got to go and sit an exam while I haven't been able to give my best. If it was a case of being in a face-to-face situation, I'd do much better. So I had to really explain to her that everybody was on the same boat. Nobody was in a better situation. You weren't disadvantaged. Perhaps you were disadvantaged in a way because you have kids at home, somebody else doesn't. But this is what we've got to cope with, and trying to remain positive. So I kind of outlined the different options for her to come into a center and have some more face-to-face solution to kind of fill the gaps for her. But we've got to do our best, really, to accommodate and help fill those gaps for these learners who have been disadvantaged, some of them because they haven't had the IT equipment right from the beginning of the course. And we've had to accommodate them during the course.
I've had learners, so I deliver the level 5 GCSE RESIT course to the ETF, and that's all been we moved it all online obviously last year, and I've had some people attending that who've got children on their lap drawing on their faces with crayons and they're still trying to sit there and study, and you just have to sort of go the extra mile, don't you? It's about being more flexible. And being fully inclusive as well. You know, the prisoner project where you've got secure estate where they just aren't coming together. I mean, how does that work? How does that even work when they haven't got computers in the cells, etc.? So it's interesting that they are looking at it all. But we need to be very responsive. We've always said that, haven't we, Em, that we can do anything in FE. We can. Yes. We can do everything. But don't make it look like school. Don't make it look like school. FE rocks indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's extreme teaching, as I call it. It is like you have to do all those things very quickly and get the motivation and deliver those like top 15 things and make sure they practice as well, because learning is non-linear, right? It's natural to forget. Our brain's evolutionarily designed to say, out it goes. This is not important until you like repeat it 5 times, as you said, Mars. Then it's saying, oh, maybe this thing is important because I've had done it 5 times. My brain better remember it in the long term. So we've got all of these like different moving parts in learning. Yeah, Corina echoes the whole thing of connecting with colleagues online all over the world. I've been calling it tutoring without borders for quite a long time, and now I call it CPD without borders because that's essentially what it is. It's a very, very exciting phase of where we are, because I know lots of people who we've been going to maths conferences, Julia, but I think like there's 5, 6, maybe even 10 times more people attending them, because we would have to book a hotel, go to Bristol or wherever and go the night, take the time off. People can just tune in from home. So you've got this incredible scalability that wasn't there, and teachers can meet in these virtual spaces. I think there used to be these Nuffield centers a long time back where there more of these meetings would happen, and that gradually got taken out. But the internet is the ultimate meritocracy, because anyone can start a Zoom call with other teachers. Anyone can start. I mean, I started this thing from scratch. It was like I started it with tutors 3 years ago, like there was nobody attending, and then the pandemic happened and suddenly like this thing took off. So and it's really, I'm just using Zoom and OBS, which is a free bit of software, so it's just up to people to train themselves, and but it's very easy to do. There's no cost to it.
We've still got to meet our heroes, O Atul. We've still got to go back to conferences and face to face, because yes, I agree that it widens the scope enormously, but there still has to be that kind of social interactivity where you do get to meet your heroes and have real live conversations. And I miss being, that's the biggest thing for me this year, being out on the road. I have not been out on the road since last January time. And I really miss that going into colleges and seeing what they're doing, and just, like I say, just magpieing as many bits and pieces as I can. What's on the walls? How are they doing this? How are they doing that? And then the whole conference scene. CPD this year has been amazing. There's all the Centre for Excellence. I was with Plymouth this week looking at their mini sort of twilight sessions they had, and they were superb. But there's been raft after raft of really good stuff, and you can just sit there and eat your cornflakes and watch it and be involved. But I still think we still need to get out there and meet people.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. I'll
go to Pop World.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. If we can't, there is something about going for drinks on a Friday night and that coffee table chat and dancing in the Pop World the night before the conference.
I don't know, I've never done it, but I will do it.
We're working on you, twisting your arm every time. It's complementary. There's never really a dichotomy. So it's like the face-to-face one helps build the online, and the online brings awareness to people who wouldn't have turned up to face-to-face to say, actually, yes, this Pop World thing and this pre-conference drinks and the conference day, and this all sounds really good. My friends are going, so I should make the time and go. So it's a virtuous cycle with both things benefiting each other. Okay, we've been going more than an hour. Is there, I can't think of any other questions that have come in recently. Is there any
I've got a question for all of you. So what's your highlight been of 2021? All of this year from September through to this year, or since lockdown last year, what's your highlight?
I can go first. It's very, for me, it's this really. I mean, it's running the Math Chat Lives and just getting to meet you all as well, and learning CPD from others. For me, it's been also for people to appreciate some aspects of online teaching. Obviously, everyone's been thrown into it from the cold. Here, you have no choice, do it, because that's the only thing you can do. But what I'm seeing is people having learnt the technology very, very quickly. Expert teachers have been teaching in the classroom for years, adapting the pedagogy to the online environment. And I've learnt a lot from these Twitter conversations, from everyone using different bits of software, adapting the teaching. So for me, it's enhanced my teaching quite a lot, and I've been able to also feel confident in doing this thing. I wouldn't be doing this thing if people weren't watching, if you weren't watching right now, wherever you are, and seeing the recordings. The fact that you are engaging, everyone's here, people are willing to come here. It's been really good for me. It's a life-changing experience, really.
Lovely.
Yeah, I think for me, it's the reflection on how much I appreciate face-to-face and proper interactions with people. It's that kind of not knowing what you've got to, it's gone kind of thing, and knowing that the moment I went into college yesterday, we went to sort out all of equipment and everything ready for Monday, and actually being in an office with people again and being able to bounce things off each other without having to see if they're free on the call, to see if they've got the little green circles, to see if you can give them a call, and just to have that immediate interaction. That reflection has been my highlight, knowing that that is where I want to be. I want to be with people, and people is what I do.
I haven't got myself a specific thing, but I suppose, like, I try to find the highlights in every single day and week and so on. So really, you know, I've thought about it, but can't find something. So I try to see the opportunity in everything that happens on a daily basis, and every kind of opportunity for communication with others and doing something together, or you know, the appreciation that you get from other people and you give to other people. I think that's the highlight for me, really.
Absolutely. I think I'd endorse that. Mine has been working in a very different way, but working with a whole new raft of people through the constellation who you find me doing chair yoga before a session now because everyone's online doing chair yoga and they just put that into place, all the wellness stuff. And I've done some fabulous workshops on nutrition just working and sleeping and everything, all the wellness stuff that's come through the constellation, which I never realised I needed. and just meeting new people. I mean, you know, Sammy Whatthetrigmath and yourself and some fabulous, fabulous people on there who are really passionate and really clever people. That for me has been a real highlight because I thought you go from something where you're not going out meeting people again, but actually you are. You're just working in a very different way with a whole raft of new besties now, which is great.
No, that's great. Karina echoes the same thing from the US. I've connected with educators from all over the world, learned so much from everyone. I used to be social media shy, but I've been engaging quite a lot. And
excellent.
We had a lovely teacher from Croatia doing augmented reality related teaching. She showed some, it was very, very cool stuff, right up my tech teaching geekery world. I've got another one too we could finish off with very nicely as well. I think people love success stories.
Is it a
maths
question?
No, Matt, it's just more motivation. We're full circle back down to motivation. So that's how I opened it. And so, you know, people love success stories. Is there any sort of case studies where, you know, of your students who really did put in the effort and maybe you hear back from them 5, 10, 15 years later and they look back at the time they had with you and they say, actually, I'm glad I put the effort in because this is what I've ended up doing. Well, I'd love to hear any stories you have
I've got a scrapbook because, you know, like everybody, I have moments where my confidence dips. And I forget the reason behind why I'm doing everything. And there's one card that I've got from an ex-student, which ends with, "You taught me that it's good to be a geek." And just that, what that just kind of sums up my whole teaching ethos. You know, it's that it's okay to like maths, you know, and I keep that with me all the time.
Aww.
Thanks, Beth.
I think for me, I think a number of stories really from different learners who've kind of gone up levels quite quickly and they've gone on to do, you know, nursing or, you know, other careers that they followed. But for me, it's more like what does success mean for them? Because it might mean a career for me or for somebody else, but what does it mean for them? And, you know, that realization, like you said, Emma, that perhaps that, you know, they didn't think of themselves as a maths person, but they now think that they can do maths, or they like maths, or I'm starting to love you, and they put it in brackets because they can't be too sure at the moment, but exclamation marks. That's the sort of thing that keeps me going as well. And now I want to see that through teachers. That's the kind of being curious about what they're doing, helping learners and seeing that unfold is what keeps me going.
Yeah, I think I'd say I've got two really. One was a student who I'd done some major revision with to get him through that November series. So this was 2019, North Harts College. And we did workshops and revision and whatever. And he got a grade 5. Out of that November series. He had cerebral palsy. He was an amazing, amazing guy. He had not had very good experience at school. Amazing guy. He got grade 5 in like 6 or 7 weeks work. And I was chuffed to bits for him because I knew it was going to make such a difference to what he could then go on to do. And he felt on top of the world after that. That was amazing. I teach on the level 5 GCSE recit program for the ETF, and the amount of teachers that then go on and think, "Well, I've really enjoyed research. I've really enjoyed working at this level. I'm going to go and have a look at a master's now. I'm going to go off and have a look at QTLS." And that for me gives me such a buzz because you brought them back to research and make them really question things and as work as a researcher as well, and that's lovely when I hear stories like that they go off to have a look at the masters or whatever, and that gives you a real buzz.
It's ripples, isn't it? We have ripples.
Yes, the amazing things teachers do. They're superhuman people, teachers. That's why we're doing what we do. Yeah, for me, I mean, there's a few of them, but I would take an inspiration from when I was at Imperial College. I did a degree in mechanical engineering, and I worked in industry. I took a year out where when you'd finish your A levels, you're working in a factory and an engineering company. It was Rolls-Royce PLC, and yeah, I would often meet these incredible engineers, and some of them would have these stories where they started off. My PhD supervisor at Imperial College, he was a pipe fitter in Teesside, so he was actually a completely practical, hands-on pipe fitter, and he did an apprenticeship. And then he learned the maths while he was doing the apprenticeship, and then eventually he ended up going to do the GCSE, then the A level, and then ended up as a researcher at university. But he still thinks of himself as a pipe fitter, very practical, hands-on person. So he was always like, in my early days when I was his student, he just said, "You can do anything, really." I did my stuff when I was in my late 20s and 30s, but it's just a matter of time. It's a matter of your priorities. It's a matter of what you're into. So I like to use that story, and I met some other lecturers who came from very similar backgrounds, and our design lecturer who encouraged all of us to take a sketchbook and draw. So like we went into engineering saying none of us like to draw or sketch or do anything, but he told us get a sketchbook and draw and thing. And he also did an apprenticeship, so he went through this apprenticeship then degree path. So there's no one way of doing whatever you want to do, and just because you didn't get the GCSE or whatever qualification at that time at that age doesn't mean that's the end of the journey. You can do it anytime. So fantastic. So yes, thank you everyone for your time on the Saturday, and for everyone who's engaged on Twitter. We'll have the recording here, and if you have any questions, just put them on Twitter again or YouTube or Facebook. And next week's a special edition Maths Chat Live for the MathsConf 25. I'll just plug it on behalf of LaSalle. It's on next Saturday, so there'll be a special one. So thank you all. I'll just end this live stream, and we'll have a quick chat, and then we can finish up.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.